This country is going through some very tough times. I mean, we don't know if DACA will remain. You don't know when is it that you're going to wake up and be, hey, now you are going to be deported.
Immigration is a hot-button political issue and at the foundation of the American experience. On this In Contrast, one immigrant story. I'm Ilan Stavans, and In Contrast is a production of New England Public Radio and Quixote Productions. Edwin Cruz was born in El Salvador. Given the turmoil in his native country, particularly for boys targeted by street gangs, his father looked for ways to save him by sending him to the United States. His journey as an immigrant is an example of the trials and tribulations of almost a million dreamers, young Latinas and Latinos who entered this country without documents. Cruz is in the process of completing his studies to become a radiologist technologist. Edwin Cruz, welcome to In Contrast. It's a pleasure to have you here. I'd like to explore with you your journey from El Salvador to the United States. You came here in 2001. Originally, you settled in Los Angeles and eventually you moved to Amherst, Massachusetts. What brought you to the United States? And can you describe a bit of your life in El Salvador before coming here so that we can get a context?
First of all, thank you so much for having me in the program. It's a pleasure for me to be here. So when I moved from El Salvador to here, the main objective why I moved here was because my dad decided to send me away from the country. Because during that time, it was very dangerous to live there, especially for a teenager, because gangs were developing, other gangs were trying to start up new gang members. And high schools, middle schools, any teenager schools were basically target for these gangs, and they were trying to bring new members. And my dad decided that it was good for me to leave the country and see what I could do in a different country.
Were the fears that your father had well-founded? Do you think that your path in life would have been very different had you stayed in El Salvador?
Oh, definitely. I had the opportunity to go back last November, and I was observing all of the friends that I left behind. People seemed to be doing very bad down there. A lot of my old friends were gang members now. It's something that I want no part of it. So I'm very thankful for my dad for sending me to this country.
I'd love for you to talk about the journey itself from Cabañas to the United States. How long was it? How much did you know? You were how old when you made the journey?
I was 14.
14.
Yeah.
Did you know what was happening?
Well, I kind of knew what was happening from a 14-year-old perspective. I knew that I had a lot of responsibility ahead of me. Everything started when he told me about the options, and one of those was to come here, and the other one was to see if I could move to Nicaragua and live in Nicaragua. I chose to come here, first of all, because most people want to come to the United States because it's the land of the dream, you know. We started by borrowing money, because we had no money to pay for the trip, and it was like $9,000, something like that. I had tried to get a visa, but it was impossible because visas down there are basically for someone that is economically stable. So we were not in that category. Then the next step was to find a coyote, they call it, or coyote. That is someone that brings illegal immigrants into this country. That is basically what we did. We found someone that will bring me in, and they estimated that the trip will take about 30 days, and it was going to be very expensive. So my dad decided, okay, so we're going to do it this day, and you're going. You're going to have someone in Los Angeles that will pay the other half of the money that we're going to spend whenever they bring you to my aunt's house. That was the deal. So I left June 7th, 2001, from El Salvador. We got to San Salvador, which is the capital of El Salvador. And then from San Salvador, we took a bus. That bus brought us to Antigua in Guatemala. That is the capital of Guatemala. We stayed at a hotel that night. then the next day we were supposed to leave from Antigua into Mexico. But we had issues. No one could get us the visa. The coyote that we paid was nowhere to be found. We waited and waited for like another 2 days in the hotel. All of a sudden, one day at around 4 a.m, someone comes in knocking on the doors and giving us the passport with a fake visa and an airplane ticket. So we had to cross the river that basically borders Guatemala and Mexico. We crossed the river. We got on bicycles. There was a taxi waiting for us. We got the taxi, and the taxi brought us to the airport, somewhere in Chiapas, Mexico. We were instructed to go to the gate, and someone there was going to be waiting for us. It was very surprising when I got there. It was like one of the workers from the airport. And they're like, oh, welcome. And they stamped my passport, basically took the boarding pass and sent me to the plane. So I took the plane, and that plane was going from Chiapas to Hermosillo in the north, and then from Hermosillo to Mexico City, and then from Mexico City to Tijuana. There were 3 flights. So we had to change plane in Mexico City. I was just a regular passenger.
And when you say we, how big was the group?
Well, during that time, I don't even know how many people were there. 50.
Really?
40.
And did you know anybody else in that group?
Well, my cousin. My cousin was with me through the whole trip until we got to San Diego.
And how did you go from Tijuana on the Mexican side to San Diego?
Well, once we got to the Tijuana after the plane, we had to get a taxi to a hotel. Once we got to the hotel, someone was there waiting for us. So we stayed there another day, and then they told us that we had to start walking, that we were going to be in the American side by the next day. So we started walking like around 6 p.m, and we basically walked like 16, 17 hours nonstop throughout the night.
The 50 people?
By then, we were probably like 20 people. Yeah, the group was a lot smaller.
Do you know what happened to the rest?
We were instructed that probably police officers will get some of us customs on the airport. We knew that only some of us were going to be able to make it. We didn't know who.
And so after 13, 14 hours, you said, you were on the other side next to San Diego?
We were, right next to San Diego. We had a car picked us up.
Do you think your life was in danger at any point during the whole journey? What did you feel throughout?
Well, it's very scary because even boarding the plane with fake documents, you know that you might get caught and then you might face charges, go to prison. All of these prisons are very different and dangerous. You're basically risking your life.
Inside the prison?
Inside the prison. You're taking so many different risks just trying to get here.
And I understand that a number of coyotes work on a 3 strikes and you're out type of way for whatever amount of money, in your case $9,000 or in the case of your father, they promise 3 attempts to cross the border. Do you know? Probably don't remember much because your father handled this part.
Well, that was the case in my experience. But the coyote also guaranteed that you were going to pass the first time. And that is also another thing that they always say. But in case you don't pass, then you go back again.
Do you remember the last time you saw your father before coming here and what you guys said to one another?
Right before I was going to go to bed, the night before I left, he was very sweet. He had done this 3 or 4 times himself during the Civil War in El Salvador, after the Civil War, trying to put food in our table. So he told me, I want you to sleep tonight because this is the last time that you're going to sleep like the way you would. And I feel like that has been true since then.
How long was it until you saw your father again?
I saw him again in person in 2007 when I was graduating from Amherst High School. He came to my graduation. Luckily, he got a visa, a tourist visa, because he was also over the age of 65. So whenever you're over 65, then they can give you a visa. They know that you won't find work in this country anymore.
In the climate of immigration debate that we are currently having, what are your views on immigration to the United States? You know, sometimes it is the immigrants that become less welcoming to other immigrants. We have this view that because somebody is an immigrant, that person will always support other immigrants, but it's not necessarily the case. So I wonder if you can reflect on the reasons why people continue to think of the United States as a magnet, as a place that where they could go. If you had kids right now in El Salvador, would you do the same thing that your father did? And is that good for El Salvador? And is it good for the United States?
Down in El Salvador, things are very bad right now. So I feel like we are a lot better than they are. And if I had kids and I was on the same situation as my dad, I would probably do the same thing. I wouldn't think about it twice because I had done really well in this country. So I feel like there is a lot of room to grow in this country, a lot of opportunities. And it's true sometimes other immigrants are almost like jealous or something like that. I can't really tell what it is. But I feel like some other people are also willing to help. And that is just in every culture.
Do you at this point feel equally Salvadoran and American, that is from the United States? You were born in one. You have spent, if I'm doing the numbers correctly, half of your life in one and half of the life, or roughly, in the other. So you are divided kind of in the middle, half and half, so to speak. What do you feel throughout El Salvador? What do you feel throughout the United States?
Well, I feel American.
You do?
Yes, I do. Most of the memories that I have them in this country. The old memories, which are, you know, equally important, are also from back home. I feel like I have spent a lot more time in this country. Sometimes I don't even know what is it that I am, if I'm Salvadorian or am I American, but I have much appreciation to both countries. I feel American, I feel Salvadorian, I feel both.
This is a new culture for you. The language is different. The way people relate to one another, the demeanor, the worldview is dramatically different. In Latin America, one grows up with the vision of the United States that comes from television shows and from movies. But here you are in the real thing. And El Salvador is also a place where the Mara Salvatrucha and other gangs from El Salvador are pretty active. There's an irony in trying to escape gang life for young males, 13, 14, 15-year-olds in El Salvador, and going to Los Angeles, where the vitality, the gravitas of many of these gangs is as important in the connections to El Salvador, very strong.
Well, when I was in Los Angeles, it was basically similar, but in a completely different level. I was still afraid of going outside. You could see people that were clearly in one or the other gang. So I was afraid, and I didn't really like that area where I was living in Los Angeles. I wanted to find something more peaceful, something better, something more Americanized. In Los Angeles, I almost felt like I was still back in El Salvador, but in a different part of the country. A lot of Latinos, similar food, similar problems, issues. I was very happy when I talked to my brother and I was coming to Amherst. Amherst was completely different. I had to learn English. English is a very difficult language to learn.
How much did you know when you arrived?
I didn't know anything.
Anything. You arrived without knowledge.
Yeah.
And so how did you come to speak the English that you speak right now?
First, I was just working. I was trying to pay the money that I borrowed to come to this country. So a couple of years went by and I didn't go to school. I was just Spanish only. And then I started going to English classes and it was called Center for New Americans. And then I talked to the teacher and she was like, hey, I think that you should go to the high school. I think that you still have the age to go to the high school. You might be a little bit older, but there are laws and rules in this state. And then she called the person in charge of the ESL department at Amherst Regional High School. And next thing I know, I'm taking a test. in the high school, and next day I'm going in for classes. It was a very difficult time because I had no English at all. And on top of taking regular English classes, I had to take math, biology, history, and all of that. I had to spend a lot of time with the dictionary trying to translate and trying to understand what was going on.
Did you undergo any period of depression or anger or...
A lot of the times. It was there all the time because you're trying to understand this and there's no way that makes sense. Having to work on top of that, all of those symptoms were in there.
At what point did you feel that English was no longer an enemy or a foreign land and was starting to become your ally?
English is so difficult for me to learn that I still feel that way. I feel like it's still very difficult. And sometimes I feel like I don't understand enough, or I feel the more things make sense whenever you say them in one way or the other. It's still fighting with it.
In the process of acquiring English, do you feel that you have lost your Spanish?
Maybe not, because I have taken more and more English classes, and to be able to understand a lot of those, I also have to translate them and trying to understand, trying to keep the bilingual stuff
going. So you have kept it alive.
You
have gone from living in Cabañas, a small town in El Salvador, through your journey as an immigrant to the United States, and now you are starting to become a radiologist.
A radiologic technologist.
Tell me why you chose this. As you well know, one of the big challenges of immigrants is precisely keeping focused and persisting in the learning curve and being accepted and finding that the American dream is also their dream. And here you are, a very impressive man. I put my hat off. How did you find your groove?
Well, still trying to find it. The idea of it first came in 2006, 2007, when I was talking to my high school teacher. She presented me with the idea of becoming a radiologic technologist, and I was like, I don't even know what that does. And one of the reasons why she threw that out there was because she knew my immigration status. She knew that I was undocumented, and I had no options to go to a four-year college. In a community college, I could probably go. But it was going to be a lot of time and a lot of money that I had to put into this. So I kept that idea on the back of my mind, and I signed up for classes at Holyoke Community College, and I started taking English, math, history, psychology classes. And then when DACA came along, then I knew that I could become a radiologic technologist. So then I started looking more into it. So I finished taking all of the prerequisites for the program, all of the anatomy and physiology, all biology classes and all of that stuff. And then I was able to get accepted in the program, a very, very difficult program to be in. They only accept 25 students. Now we're 7 left. I'm still in the program and I'm still going for it. I'm hoping to graduate in May.
Has this entailed a lot of debt? We talk a lot about the debt that young students have to engage in order to get an education.
No, I have no debt at all as of now, and I'm hoping to keep it that way. When I was undocumented, I couldn't take any classes unless I had the money to pay for them. So I was able to take only one class at a time and work in order to pay for it. Because of that, I could only take one class at a time, and I've been taking classes for a long time now. I never stopped. So this program or RadTech, it's something that most students will get in 2 or 3 years. It's going to take me like 7 or 8.
But know that.
Yep.
Among other things.
That's the most important
one. So Edwin, this is a country where right now there's a heated conversation on immigration. and on the role that those undocumented have in it, and you are one of them. I want to ask you several connected questions, and you answer any of the ones that you feel more comfortable. How come you are so open and free and ready to talk about your status in the atmosphere in which we live? Are you not afraid? And what is your reaction, emotional, intellectual, psychological, to the current conversation that we're having on immigration? What would you say to recent arrivals to this country? Would it be don't come, this is not the right time, or keep on coming in spite of the time? And what would you say also to those that are saying to potential future or present arrivals, don't come or come?
I'm doing this because it's almost like an awareness. I want to encourage more people so they can come to this country. There is also a lot of room to grow in this country. And it might be very difficult, but there is a chance. So the fight will be hard, but if people can come here, go for it. Sometimes, you know, like the feelings and the way people treat you and stuff like that, it's very difficult. It's very different from being back home, but there is a way. I do this because I want more people to know. I want more people to get encouraged, more people to think outside of the box, not just everything that you're supposed to be doing or they tell you that you can do. A lot of immigrants or a lot of dreamers, they are not going to school because they feel like, oh, it's too expensive. I can't pay for all of those classes. One or two classes at a time, but there is a way, and eventually all of that is going to pay off. And I know that this country is going through some very tough times. I mean, we don't know if DACA will remain or if Donald Trump is going to take DACA away. So it's always that fear. You don't know when is it that you're going to wake up and be, hey, now you are going to be deported or now you are deportable.
I'm going to switch briefly to Spanish because I want you also to say something for those English language listeners. It is not so much that the content will be different, but it's because I think that the message that Edwin just played out would be very interesting to hear it in Spanish too. ¿Tú crees que este tipo de mensaje que acabas de dar es importante que llegue en español? ¿Y en inglés o solamente en español a aquellos que son jóvenes y que son inmigrantes?
No, definitivamente en español también, porque hay muchos de nosotros de que no hablamos muy bien el inglés. Entonces, si hay alguien por allá de que no habla mucho inglés, hay posibilidades acá de aprender, hay lugar donde crecer, hay que seguir trabajando, hay que estudiar. No importa de que solo se pueda tomar una clase a la vez o una clase cada dos semestres, pero hay que seguir. Esa es la única manera en la que vamos a salir adelante nosotros como hispanos y nosotros, como todos los hispanos sabemos, acá tenemos que trabajar doble o triple para tratar de seguir adelante.
I have a couple of questions in order to wrap up the show. One of them is you talked earlier in our conversation about going back after many years to your country not too long ago. And it would be lovely to give our listeners, certainly I would love to get it myself, a sense of what it meant to return to El Salvador, having not had the papers for many years and thus, if I understand it right, not having had the possibility to travel and returning to your place of origin.
Mm-hmm. In order for me to go to El Salvador, I had to apply for something that it's called an advanced parole. As we all know, whenever we talk about parole, we're talking about something that a criminal comes out of prison with. And they basically categorize our exits of the country the same way. So I applied for that last March, I believed. So it took them about 9 or 10 months for them to approve it. Whenever they approved it, they only approved it for 3 weeks. And I was in the middle of going to school and doing clinical during that time, so I could not miss any school at all. So I decided to go for 3 days after not being there for 16 years. But 3 days, it's a lot more than nothing. And that was the only chance. After spending so much money trying to get this document that will allow me to live and come back. And it was also very risky because during that time, Donald Trump was going to be in power. And you never know because with him, everything has been like so spontaneously.
You might not come back.
That you might not even come back. He might say like, okay, now no one is allowed to enter the country anymore.
Did you have second thoughts about traveling?
I did, but at the same time, I saw it as an opportunity where you have to put everything on the table. I had to do it.
And how was El Salvador?
El Salvador was very, very different and at the same time similar from what I remember. People were still the same. The struggle is big down there and things haven't changed much. The only thing that it has changed a lot, I think that it has been cell phones. There is a lot of cell phones down there. People like to communicate a lot, apparently.
As well there. Again, this is none of my business, and it might not be of our listeners' business. But just in order to put it in context, you said you and your father had to put $9,000 to come here. How much did you have to pay to go back to El Salvador for 3 days?
I had to pay around $3,000. Yeah, three, or probably a little bit more. Just for the permits and all of that was like $1,000. Then $900 for the flight. On my way back here, I missed the flight. Then I was in the customs in Miami for a little while, for like 4 hours.
That must have been frightening.
Yeah, it was because they're asking questions that are a little bit, you know, intimidating. And yeah. Also, you know that they are La Migra,
yeah.
Or ICE.
Immigration.
Immigration enforcement. Yes. You know that they are like the enemy. So it's very scary.
I want to conclude with a question that I am eager to hear your thoughts on. Just as we are engaged in this big debate on immigration, there is often the feeling that there is an anti-Hispanic, there's a phobia for Hispanics. Mm-hmm. And it is not always easy to distinguish between what is immigration and who's against or who's for, and who is against or for Latinos. Mm-hmm. And they might be the same thing or they might be two different things. Do you think that this country has a Latino problem in that sense? And if so, do you think that that can be improved?
Well, with having our current president, Donald Trump, has made things worse because people think that it was okay to act, to behave like that. Now they see that it's okay for the president to act like that. So now everybody wants to assimilate and they feel like it's okay.
And do you think, Edwin, there is an equivalent of anti-Hispanic feeling in El Salvador or something along those lines? Or is this something exclusive to the United States?
I feel like it's only in this place. Hmm. Yeah. I feel like it's only in this country. That it might be something down there too. But
that has to do with class, yeah. Or has to do with race.
It's less open.
It's less open.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming and narrating your story, personalizing it. Very often we hear so much about immigrants and immigration, but it seems to me that we don't hear about who those immigrants are. And yours is a success story. It's a very moving story. It's a journey of coming from lack of knowledge to knowledge and from one reality to another. And you tell it in a very passionate and at the same time very centered and calculating way. And I salute you and thank you for coming to In Contrast.
Thank you very much for having me. Muchas gracias.
Placer. Immigration is the tapestry that makes this a unique, all-encompassing nation. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. That famous line by Emma Lazarus is engraved on the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty. It is the country's mantra. Those who are displaced and made unwelcome in other places come to America with a dream, the dream of a better future, for themselves and for their children. Now those views are under attack. Those that seek to come without resources, but with the conviction that things can be better, are perceived as a threat. The current immigration rhetoric is about building walls, which naturally means closing doors. In this atmosphere, people become numbers on statistical charts. They are demonized, turned into stereotypes. deprived of their humanity. Truth is, immigrants are hard workers. They are the engine that makes this country the envy of others. Each and everyone came to the United States for a reason. They have families, they go to school, they work, and they seek happiness like everyone else and contribute to the development of this nation. Our immigration system is broken, no question about it. It needs fixing. Our politicians have been remiss in implementing the right solutions. But immigrants cannot be targeted as a result. The amount of criminals among them is dramatically smaller than in the general population. And the number of them who are in schools, in steady jobs, opening new businesses is higher. What makes America great isn't anger, but empathy and compassion. What makes America great is its capacity to connect with other parts of the globe. It is immigrants in all their colors, in all their possibilities, that make America great. Next time on In Contrast.
If we are not empowering our children, statistics state that our children are more than likely to do drugs, they're more than likely to commit crimes, they're more than likely to become pregnant as a teen, they are more than likely to drop out of school. It's essential to empower our children immediately with the love and the compassion and the nurturing of reading. When you don't read, you don't succeed. It really is as simple as that.
Ty Allen Jackson, next time on In Contrast. Let us know what you think about In Contrast. Review us on Apple Podcasts or send an email to radio@npr.net. The executive producer of In Contrast is John Vosey. Our music is by the Fresh Cut Orchestra. I'm Ilan Stavans. Thank you for listening. In Contrast is a production of New England Public Radio and Quixote Productions.